much bigger brained people have studied and studied, and our brain is unable to multitask. It's just not possible.
This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome out to another episode of the PMP Industry Insider Podcast, where we take a look at what is changing in the pest and lawn industries, and we take you to the front lines to those that are driving those changes. As always, I'm Donnie Shelton, owner of Triangle Home Services, which has Triangle Pest as well as Triangle Lawn. And with me is the most famous Florida resident that I know, at least, Mr. Dan Gordon. Dan, would you like to say good morning, introduce our sponsors, our guest, and our topic, and I guess yourself too, if you want to throw that in there.
So I could do that. Yeah. Dan Gordon, PCO Bookkeepers, M&A Specialists, CFO Services for the Lawn and Pest, as well as Exit Planning Services. I am a Florida guy for one more day, as I will be traveling back to New Jersey for the summer starting tomorrow.
Hey, just to pause you there real quick, you know, there is something to be in the Florida man. If you've not, if you don't know what the Florida man is, you may want to just look it up. Maybe that's what I should start calling you, is Florida
all
man.
All right. Well, I'll look at that. And
continue.
We'll be going out to, we'll be stopping in Blacksburg, Virginia to see my son graduate from Virginia Tech on Wednesday and Thursday. So I'm excited.
Oh, nice.
About that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's cool. So anyway, back to business. Our sponsors, if you're interested in marketing services for the pest management or lawn care industry, that would be Colmarch by WorkWave. That's colmarch.com. And if you want insurance for the pest management industry, that would be auto, general liability, workers' comp, EPLI, and others. Visit PestSure, and that's PestSure.com. And that'll be appropriate for when I introduce our guest. If you're interested in joining a PMP Industry Insider group, please visit PMPIndustryInsider.com/peer groups or go back and listen to episode 136 for more information. And today we are going to talk about distracted driving, and our guest from PestSure is Linda Midyat. And she's the director of safety for PestSure Association and a vice president with Alliance Insurance Services. PestSure provides captive insurance coverage to pest control member companies nationwide. We've been seeing them and using them and with our clients for many years. Her duties are to identify, develop, and implement appropriate strategies to mitigate losses in auto liability, workers' comp, and general liability. Those policies that I mentioned before. And when we last spoke on episode 138, is that right? Yeah, 138, how to upgrade your safety protocols. So anyway, Linda, I can keep reading, but anyway, welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
glad that you're here. Linda, I'm excited about getting in this podcast because I want to talk about well, obviously, we're going to be talking about auto. We're going to be talking about, you know, the topic, obviously, is going to be distracted driving. And I want to start it off with a quick story, which I think I've shared on the podcast before, but this happened many years ago. It was back in the day when I was running Colmarch and we were doing CO2, and we did a CO2 over in downtown Raleigh. It was the first time we were in downtown, like the big building at the Sheraton. And we had just the most amazing conference. It was fantastic. And I was worn out. It was at the end. It was a big success. And I'm heading home. I think it's like Friday or whatever. And I'm at a stoplight and I'm texting to my wife, like, what are we going to eat for dinner? And as I'm texting her that, the traffic starts going with the stoplight. So I start going with the, traffic. And it was when I hear a crunch that I realized that it was not my lane that was going. It was the lane beside of me. And I ran into the back of someone just texting my wife. And here's the best part, which I hope no one from Triangle is listening to this because they're going to kill me. At the time, I had a policy that said no texting and driving. So it was pretty appropriate. After that, I was very embarrassed, very, very embarrassed. Luckily, it was not a huge thing. Like, the person was not injured. I did have to pay some money to fix this beamer that I hit. But my truck was fine. But in the end, after that, what I did was there's a function on the iPhone that you can turn off notifications and you can turn off basically your cell phone while you're driving. and it'll automatically send a text saying, hey, I'm driving right now. So I did that after that, and I promised myself that I would not do that anymore, because it was just so stupid. I felt so bad because the traffic beside me started going, but not in front of me. And so, yeah, learned the hard way. So there you go.
Guilty. Distracted driving. Guilty.
Guilty as charged, I will say. So, yes.
Now, just before we begin, the Florida man is a disgraced cop in debt, is forced to return to his home state of Florida for a shady mission, only to get swept up in a wild and deadly treasure hunt. I'm not that guy.
Oh, no. There's a whole website called Florida Man that every single day they celebrate something that crazy happens in Florida. But we'll leave that for another episode.
Oh, this was a Netflix series called Florida Man.
All Linda, right. Welcome to our podcast.
From Florida, by the way.
That's Florida, right. You're from Sarasota, right?
That's right.
You're on the other side. You're where people are polite. See, we're on the East Coast, where the northern, northeastern, gutter mouths are. So anyway.
What I was going to say, so auto is obviously a huge, huge topic right now. Everyone is struggling getting coverage in auto. Auto rates are going way up. Can you just kind of provide us with an overview of what the heck is happening in auto, and why is this so difficult? Like, what is going on? Can you just kind of walk us through that first before we get into distracted driving?
I can a little bit. Of course, Todd Burke and Christina Phillips on our program are more in tune to the, the insurance side of things, but auto is just a problem. And our topic today, distracted driving, happens to be one of the things that has really made auto insurance sort of unaffordable by everyone. The other thing is, I think that we unintentionally make ourselves pretty vulnerable to what I'll just call an active legal climate, active plaintiff's bar. And every time someone, like you said, Donnie, you just, kind of bumped into the car in front of you, every time that happens now, we brace ourselves for, and we, I mean the insurance industry, we brace ourselves for a large loss. Because we came in contact with a vehicle, our vehicle is logoed, we have nice deep pockets and good insurance coverage, and all of those things. And we're just a little sliver. We're just, we're just a small insurer, just a little sliver of what every large auto insurer is experiencing out there.
Right. And is this a function of where underwriters are simply saying, we don't want to be in that business anymore, or just like, well, we're going to be in it, but we're going to have to drastically increase rates? I remember when we had Todd on last time, he actually talked about this a little bit. He didn't spend a ton of time on it, but he talked about how much the climate has changed in terms of lawsuits over accidents, and how, like what you just said, now it's not simply getting the car fixed. There's a lot more going on. I guess the question there then is it just a case of where like these underwriters are just saying, we're not doing this anymore, or they're the ones that are really driving up the rates because they're having to, ultimately they're the ones that are having to, bear the burden of what's happening.
Yeah. It's all just a, I'll go to Dan's world here. It's all just a math equation. It's, you have this amount of losses, you need this amount of dollars, to pay for them.
So before all this happened, turn back the clock 3-4 years, different states were a lot more expensive than other states. And so is that still a thing, or have all the states been moving up, and are they all kind of closing the gap?
I don't know. I know that our auto policy, it doesn't differ by state necessarily. Mm-hmm. But remember, we're a captive group and our, we need rates in our investments to cover our losses. So, right. That's a small portion of that.
Right.
State by state, it would seem that property and some things like that vary more than, you know, like in Florida trying to buy homeowners insurance versus somewhere else.
Crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so, I will say this. I'm always impressed when I go to Florida at the road signs. And there's always like these attorneys, you know, rolling up their sleeves, like in a
Morgan and Morgan
mouth.
For the people.
For the people.
They're going to get in a fight. No, but anyway, so why is distracted driving? Why are the costs up, you know, in claims? Why are they increasing PMP's exposure? Because obviously, again, everyone I know of, every single person that is an operator is struggling with this. So I'm sure that our listeners here, if they're listening to this, they're having the same issue. Why is distracted driving, why is it driving up costs so much? And why are claims increasing our exposure as operators?
It's driving up costs so much because the accidents we're becoming involved in, our drivers are becoming involved in, are those that you would typically say are completely within the driver's control. So if I tell you that 48% of my losses in the PESHER program result from the rear end collision where we pile into the back of another vehicle, that's pretty much in control of the driver, our driver.
Right.
And those become harder to defend. And that number and that percentage keeps creeping up, along with when we run a stop sign, a red light or a stop sign. And those crashes, again, are a lot in our driver's control, pretty much 100%, right? So then you add to that the logoed vehicle, the commercial vehicle, whatever you wanted to call it, and it all just combines for the sort of perfect situation. If you were lucky enough to get hit by, you know, involved in that kind of a crash, you've got all these folks on TV and billboards telling you that the insurance company will undoubtedly take advantage of you, and you deserve to become a multimillionaire as a result of this crash. So, you know, we have to be that much better in our when we're on the road, when we have drivers on the road, we have to be that much better because we're definitely a target.
Seems reasonable that you should become a millionaire if you're in a accident. But what are the PMPs getting wrong when it comes to reducing distracted driver incidents, and how can they fix it? What are some of the things that that you think that can be done? And also, what are some of the things that, you know, is it just the legal profession out of control? Is there anything that we can do on that side, or that's not even?
Yeah, I'll briefly comment on that. And there are groups working on that whole reform of that legal system. If you know Bobby Jenkins, talk to him, find him sometime at an event and talk to him about his activities there, because Texas is horrible, just as horrible as Florida. But I don't know that our operators are getting it wrong, but what I will say is that cell phone use while driving has become such a habit, and I call it a habit and not a necessity. I've been in this business long enough that we weren't on our phones while driving when I started 21 years ago. It wasn't a situation. Our companies weren't structured, and they didn't operate under the norm of when I call that driver, I want to hear from them right then, right now. Like, you know, if they're en route, they better be answering that phone. If they're not standing in front of a customer talking to them, then they need to be answering my call, says Mr. Supervisor or Ms. Supervisor, or, you know, whomever it might be. Now, if we really think about that, the instances where we have to get a hold of our people in the field on the spot are slim and none. And I don't run a pest control company, But I sure have talked to a lot of people and been around pest control a lot in my years. And I will say that it's just become a habit that we can break. We don't have to have our drivers doing anything but driving when they're behind the wheel of that vehicle. When they're piloting the vehicle, they don't have to be doing anything else. And what the main thing we have to fight is the habits that have formed, the internal practices that have just sort of evolved to that, right? And then no one can look at a company and say, it's an expectation of the people who own and run this company that this person multitask while driving when that crash happens. Because that's what we don't want to see.
Are there any stats on personal versus business type distractions? Because I'm going to say that half of it's just a guess and I have no evidence, but I would imagine half of it is girlfriends, boyfriends, you know, kids, whatever.
You know, that's the interesting part. And that's a lot of the discussion I've been having with our company owners that insure with us over the last few weeks is, do you really want to be increasing the crash risk for your vehicles, your fleet vehicles, fourfold so that your employee can talk to their wife about what's for dinner? Right?
Because that hurt. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, it is true.
Yeah, it's true. It's a habit. People get in and I'll tell you, I see it more often than not when I'm at a pest control company in the morning and vehicles are leaving and, you know, coming and going. It is such habit. They're backing up while buckling their seatbelt while getting on their phone, you know, and it's all habit. There's nothing that has to be going on there.
So, I was going to say, so one thing I will say, and I've seen this, I've witnessed it, and I've heard it, which is you can't completely eliminate the phone because in many cases, I feel like operators are also using that phone for navigation. Yeah. I mean, I remember back when I used to drive and I would teach technicians off of a map book. Like I would spend literally 2 weeks teaching them how to, you know, kill pests and another 2 weeks how to read a map book, you know, the right way. I mean, legitimately, like, that's, I don't know if you remember those days. Okay. Turn the book this way. And is that a right or left? And anyway, so my point is like, I think that's also a challenge, right? It's like, how do you disable the phone when it also is part of the service itself, right? I mean, it's part of navigation of how a technician is going to get to the next stop. How have you guys dealt with that? Or how, I mean, what's the best way to manage that? I have some ideas, but I want to hear what you think.
Yeah. Well, what we're asking our folks to do is to just consider only allowing voice-enabled navigation use when the vehicle is in motion, you know, when it's being driven. So that's an allowable use, voice-enabled navigation. And by the way, voice-enabled is a key there because, you know, a lot of folks don't like that that voice telling them when to turn, and you know, maybe the voice tells them too often leading up to it, and they like to turn off the voice altogether and just look at the screen. Well, that's not great, right? So voice-enabled navigation is an acceptable use of the phone in the vehicle.
What about the voice-enabled texts? I know that a lot of people get the texts that just show up. Yeah. Doesn't seem like it's a problem unless, of course, you're going to answer the text, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. Any of those things that are going to require your brain to leave the task of driving and do something else. That's where we get into problems. Much bigger brained people have studied and our brain is unable to multitask. It's just not possible. So we switch task. We switch back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And we do both things that we're switching between, or all three, or however many there happens to be, not as well, poorly.
So is there...
Go ahead.
Is there some sort of a... What's the reward for me making sure that all of my techs don't, you know, comply with everything? Is it just that my rates will be lower, but maybe not because I'm in a captive with, you know, tens of thousands of other trucks? I mean, what, like, okay, so can I quantify this, or can I actually see the results of my efforts?
In our small insurance program, I truly believe that the results of the efforts will show pretty quickly. We've seen an increase in frequency, and we've seen an increase in the frequency of the kinds of accidents that come out of distracted driving, which was about a year ago. I did a large loss study, and I think I mentioned this in our prior podcast, and we didn't like at all what we saw in that large loss study for our program. And that is that data, our own data, is what led us to some of these current initiatives that we're working on. The cell-free work zone in the vehicle being one of them. And yes, I'll just say right out, you know, rear end collisions are the most prevalent type of collision, and we are finding more and more and more that they're happening because we just aren't there. We're distracted from the task of driving. So
I got a couple of questions, because you as you're talking, I'm like, I got 1,000 questions rolling through. I'm gonna try to pick out at least two. The first one is, you know, and this is kind of more of just a thought than it is. I mean, I'm assuming this is really just more of a paradigm shift in general for operators, right? I mean, if someone was in one of our trucks doing 100 miles an hour, we're done, right? I mean, it's over, right? I mean, that is so far out. Like, we can't recover from that. Like, it's just not a place. At the same time, it's extremely difficult to replace technicians, like, especially in this day and age, right? I mean, you talk to anyone and they're going to tell you that, hey, you know, what's our number one issue? Our number one issue is recruiting and getting, you know, getting really good people. And so there's always this tendency not to can someone if they're on their phone. Whereas, like, you know, if they're doing 100 miles an hour, it's like, oh no, that's a clean kill. And so I think probably, at least for me, as we're talking, the thing that I'm kind of coming to realize is like, hey, this is just as critical, if not more dangerous, is going 100 miles an hour in a truck, right? I mean, that's really the level that you need to think about this. The second question I have, and that's more of a statement, it wasn't even a question, so I'm sorry, but just as I'm thinking, you know, as you're talking, but the real question I have is like, okay, so I decide I want to do this. I need a cell phone policy. Is there like a sample somewhere, or like a kind of a model policy that I could use? That's like, I mean, I'm not an attorney. I don't claim to be, don't want to be. But, you know, I could easily see me putting in a cell phone policy, and then we have to go to court, and someone says, well, yeah, he had a policy, but no one enforced it. Like, it's basically meaningless, pointless. You know, why even have one? Is there something out there that, like, we can share with folks? It's like, hey, this is where we start.
Yeah.
Anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if you guys know this, but April was National Distracted Driving Awareness Month.
I was unaware.
I was unaware. I would have sent you a card or something.
But thank you for enlightening me, because now it's good.
So it was National Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and the National Safety Council really does a lot of work, as does the DOT, the NHTSA, which I can never, anyway, all the traffic, all the driving and traffic organizations focus on distracted driving awareness during the month of April. And the National Safety Council really heads up that effort. And they happen to have, they've been working on it for years and years and years, but they have lots of tools for the company that decides that they're going to commit to cell-free work zone in the vehicle. And the first thing they share and have available free on their website are the tools for doing this. So when I say tools, I mean, they have a template to write a policy that's excellent, and it's the one we've adopted at Pescher. They have a letter to send to your drivers to first introduce this concept. They have voicemail greetings to put on your phone that say, you know, I'm driving, but I'll call you the moment I stop. They have frequently asked questions, information for the people that this is going to affect, your drivers, all of that stuff. I mean, they're a great resource for that. And it's all free and it's all there.
So I want to be able to is there a sample that we can just grab that I want to put it on? We do show notes at the end of the show, and I would love to link that up. Maybe at the end, if you could just give us a couple of links, we'll make sure that we get that posted on the podcast website so that folks can come in and see what it is. Because I will tell you, that's a difficult thing to do, is like, okay, so we have a policy. There's creating the policy, and then there's the follow through on the policy. What can you just walk us through? Like, okay, so obviously if you decide, okay, I'm going to adopt this cell free or cell phone free area inside the vehicle. I want to go, I'm convinced, okay, I've got to do this. What does enforcement look like?
Yeah.
What have you seen that actually changes behavior, right? Because there's policies, of course, and I mean, there's speed limits, right? And we all know that everyone follows a speed limit, especially Dan. He's a Florida man, right? But I'm just saying, like, how do you make sure that, okay, so now I put the policy in place, how do I change the behavior? That, to me, is probably the real key, right?
Yes, it is the key. And the interesting thing is, as we've been renewing our auto policies this year in 2024, I ran across several companies that had just exactly the policy we were looking for in place. But then we had varying ways of following that policy, right? Varying levels of policy adherence. How's that?
Yes. Yeah, that's good.
Which could probably get you in more trouble than
it can get you in some trouble. Yes. Yeah. So how do you do it? So, and I've been talking, I should know this, I probably say it in my sleep, but the first thing you have to do is write your policy and ask your people and educate them and tell them, this is our expectation now, because it hasn't been, right? It's a total shift, truly. It's a whole new thing. And so the first thing you've got to do, because right away people jump to enforcement. If I put this policy in place, how am I going to enforce it? How am I going to make sure? I said, well, let's put the policy in place, right? And then let's say our expectations are this. And then as you're doing this, you're going to hear, but what about, but what about, but what about, but what about? And that's going to help you say, these are the things we need to change to our internal processes, you know, here at Triangle. This is what we need to tell our dispatch people. This is what I need to tell my sales folks. This is what I need to tell, you know, my drivers. The big, big, big group that must get on board right away and upfront are your supervisors and managers, because you know this, you come in and you pound the drum and you say, this, from this day forward, this is how this is going to work. And this is what we're going to do. And you need one influential supervisor or manager to say, yeah, right. You heard that, but this is how we're going to do it, right? After the meeting's all over and after everyone's been told, and it all comes crashing down. So they're your first group to sell and get on board and say, this is why and this is how. In fact, you folks are going to help us figure out how, right? And then you just start to live it. So you change your practices. When I was knowing that I was going to get all these calls from our members to talk exactly about this, how do we do it? I called a good friend of mine. He's been a friend for years, and he's not in the safety end of pest control. He's in sales and operations. His name's Bill Welsh. He's with Rose Pest. And I said, Bill, I need you to walk me through something, because I'm at companies all the time, and I'm either preceded by or followed by a chemical company or a chemical supplier. And a company is changing either a piece of equipment for application, or they're changing the product they're using for this particular thing or that particular thing. And it seems like a big deal when that goes on. It seems like it's something that really affects a lot of people. And he goes, well, yeah, it is. He said, I can give you an example. He said, we just changed out ILTs. And I said, great, okay. I said, walk me through everything that had to happen there, the vendor for them, okay? I said, walk me through everything that had to happen there. Every person in the company who had to has a little piece of this procedure and, you know, who has to know something different about how they operate or what they do. Oh, we had to do brochures and we, you know, we have to educate the sales team and we have to educate the frontline technician and we have to do this and we have to do that. And, you know, and it's like, yes, you guys do this all the time. And it's no different when you put in a policy that says, now we will no longer call you while you're driving your vehicle. Now we don't have an expectation that you grab that phone when you're driving. We don't want you on the phone when you're driving. And you can get it done, just like you get done all of those other changes that you do throughout your company that affects everyone in your company all the time.
Interesting. So have you talked me through like, and we're, I wish we had more time. We're not out of time quite yet, but we're, I want to get to a point where we talk about, have you seen a company who's done this successfully and can you just walk through what they did? I mean, obviously there's getting the policy, there's buying into the policy and selling it to, you know, and I'm just going to recap what you just said to your leaders first and then to your team. And then the reinforcement after that. Can you just walk me, is there anyone that you know of that's just like, wow, yes, this company, they started and now they're in a really good spot and there's tangible, you know, there's tangible benefits or at least tangible results from the changes that they made. Can you think of an example off the top of your head of someone that you know that's done this or, and then how did they do it?
I can give you a couple of things on this front. One is this. When I started looking at mobile phone use policies, cell phone policies, as of our January 1 renewals, in the first quarter, we renewed 26 policies, and 10 of them had compliant, let's just say compliant policy, and 16 of them had non-compliant policy. And when I compared the losses, the auto losses, for those two groups, the frequency rate for the compliant, the accident frequency rate for the compliant companies was 1.16, and the frequency rate for the non-compliant companies was 4.36. Oh. So right there, it was sort of like, whoa, right?
Yeah.
So, and remember, I told you a little bit earlier that those compliant companies, some of them live and breathe it, and maybe some of them don't, but they have the policy at least, right?
Right.
So that right there was enough to convince me we're headed in the right direction here. The other thing I'll tell you on that front or that question, Donnie, is people will always say to me when I've been talking to my companies, they'll say, oh, I don't know how we're going to do this. What about that situation where we've got a tech who leaves from home in the morning and we get a call from Mrs. Jones and Mrs. Jones doesn't want them coming to the house that day. And we've got to get a hold of them because that client is, you know, 150 miles. You know, it's always some exaggerated amount. Yeah, I go, you need some routing help. No.
Yeah. We got bigger issues to fix.
But anyway, I can't tell you the number of people who brought that instance up to me. And I'm thinking that must happen a heck of a lot because that's the only thing anyone can ever come up with. And then I thought, right. No, it doesn't. It doesn't right. happen.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just, I'll just sort of recap by saying it's just a matter of changing our habits. It's a matter of changing out, you know, how we think about this need to get a hold of. It's easy. It's a convenience, right? When you have a thought to be able to text or call someone that moment and get a response, that's convenient.
Yeah.
But we don't need to operate that way.
you know, the thing I'm really thinking about right now as you're talking is, and I'm talking about myself here, is that it really needs to just be a paradigm shift. And it needs to be, whereas before it wasn't that big a deal, it actually is a big deal, and we're starting to see it. I have so I live in Raleigh, and we have Fujifilm. They're putting this massive campus here in Holly Springs. I mean, when I say massive, I'm talking like million square feet buildings. I mean, there's just like eight of them. And so it's this huge project. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who, he's a project manager there, and he was telling me about how militant they are about safety. There are no energy drinks on the site. Mm-hmm. You can't pick up a pipe longer than 8 feet. You cannot carry materials upstairs, and they have cameras. And if you're caught, they send you on your way. Like, it was just amazing. And there's more that he was telling me about, but I guess my point is like kind of going back to where we started, which is, you know, I would never allow a technician that was doing 100 miles an hour in a vehicle to continue to work for Triangle, because it's so far out of the safety range that it's just, and I think that's probably the take home here, is that there needs to be like a realization and an acknowledgement that this is a lot bigger, and it's going to hurt in the long run, even though it may not seem like it's a big deal. They're actually like that, the stat that you shared, you know, the 1.16 versus the 4 point, whatever, like that's enough there. So, all right, let's finish this out.
Yes, and I've got one real quick though, Linda, can you quantify this? So I have a 10 truck fleet, and one of my guys just isn't compliant and gets himself into an accident. What does that do dollar wise to my premium versus I have a 50 truck fleet and one person doesn't? Can you quantify that, or is that something that we could look into? Or
I can kind of quantify it. Okay. That's probably more of a Todd Burke question too. But what I can tell you, and this is what I talk to with owners about, is you got to remember that when you have a crash with one vehicle in your fleet, it can affect the rates on all your vehicles, mm-hmm. unlike your homeowner or your personal policy. You know, right. Your personal policy, you have that crash and it might affect two vehicles, not 50 and not 10, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The rate so, across that amount.
The other thing I just want to really get in is that we're kind of held to a higher standard, and maybe it's unfair, and many of our owners would say that's not fair, and you know, life's not fair, but every driver on the road is distracted by their phone now. And it doesn't take but a minute of looking around when you're driving to know that, right? We have a lot more to lose. Our businesses have a lot more to lose. So we have to be that much better with everyone else on the road distracted. We can't be. Our drivers can't be, because they're trying to drive well and get from point A to point B and trying to avoid all those distracted drivers out there.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I stopped riding a bicycle on the road.
Yes.
It's very recent, because I'm like, I see so many people like not paying it. But yet, you know, I think about like, I could be better about making sure at Triangle, we have one of these policies, but I feel like we could be a lot better at enforcing it, because I don't know the last time I've talked about it. It's been quite some time. But I can tell you, after talking with you, we're going to make that a big priority, and we're actually going to get back on top of that. So if someone is a pest sure customer and they're like, okay, I need to do this, what can you do in terms of education, like help? What exactly can you guys do to kind of get someone up to speed and kind of getting them to do this on their own? Is there anything you guys can provide?
Yeah. We've got a lot of resources. Those I mentioned from the National Safety Council for getting your program, you know, getting your policy written and getting your program rolling with your drivers. I'm headed out next week, I'm on vacation, the week after, to a couple of locations, just to talk to drivers about all of this, about, you know, you're worth more than you can imagine, and we can't be talking and driving, and to help companies get over that hurdle, to really help them get their folks into the mindset of this is a habit we can break. It's just a habit. That's right. All it is. And And a couple of my visits coming up are to meet with the supervisory and management teams, because again, that's the biggie. They have to be singing out of that same hymnal. They just have to be, or it's right. you're gonna have a real difficult time if you don't have every one of your leadership team on board.
So what I hear you saying is you can help them get a policy in place. You can come out, do some training, and with both the leaders as well as the drivers themselves. I think that's fantastic. It's awesome support. Dan, anything to add, any questions before we finish up here today?
No, I think this has been really good, really educational. I know that lately, you know, that there's two questions I get. How do I reduce my insurance and how do I not pay taxes? The second one's easier. So
don't make any money.
That's right.
Great. Well, Linda, this has been amazing. It's been fantastic. Obviously, it's not the, you know, it's not the, I would say probably the easiest topic to talk about, but certainly one that's necessary. And obviously it's affecting everyone. So I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for your support of the podcast, as well as what you guys do for the industry. And with that, we're going to wrap up this show. Just a reminder, the things that we talked about in this episode will be available on the podcast website, pmpindustryinsider.com. Just take a look under show notes. And we ask that if you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, that you give us a nice 5-star rating. And if you have complaints, concerns, or just general complaining in general, we ask that you pass that on to Dan. And with that, we'll sign out. We'll see you all next time. Take care now.
Take care. See ya.
Bye. Bye.